Kevin sent me a thing about the Notre Dame offensive line essentially signed a deal with, what, a pizza place, basically?
Well, they signed. They actually have two endorsement deals, so they're part of this name, image, and likeness thing. And this is the kind of thing that I would really, that I do expect, and this is what I think most of it's going to be. They signed a deal with Mission Barbecue, which is, it's a chain that just opened up in the last less than 6 months, I think, in Mishawaka, but in the area. And it's actually pretty good, so that, you know, I'll give them a thumbs up. Their ribs are pretty good. Brisket I could take or leave. Anyway, they have other stores as well, founded by some veterans, you know, retired, I think Army, but I can't remember that for sure. And so they have an endorsement deal with that, the whole offensive line, including the reserves. Now, if somebody gets moved from offense to defense, I don't know what happens. The other thing they have, though, is Thursday pizza night for free, and it doesn't say anything about compensation. There may be some compensation as well, but they can have their every Thursday pizza night for free at Jets Pizza. And Jets is a chain. I don't know how wide, you know, how far they reach. I tried it once, didn't think the pizza was all that hot. But you know, pizza, as far as I'm concerned, starts out wonderful and works its way up from there. Although there's,
I don't know, some of these big chains are pretty awful.
There's definitely an exception for, I can't even remember the name of the place. They have a pizza buffet. It's sort of like a, what's that place where the kids always had birthday parties?
I know what you're talking about. You know, they had all the machines in the place.
Yeah, and that was, you know, I never did anything more than go in and drop off or pick up my kids. I never did anything there. But there's another place that's kind of made as a family-oriented with a pizza buffet. And so I said, well, pizza buffet, I have to go try that. And it sucked.
Yeah.
It was lousy.
Cardboard pizza with lousy toppings.
Yes. But and now I can't even remember the name of it, and that's fine. I would know the place if I saw it, and know better than to go in there. Anyway, I digress. So they have a couple of food deals, which makes sense for the offensive line, doesn't it?
In regards to how I started this conversation, it leaves me with a minimum of 15 questions, and I won't go through all of them. And I suspect that as David is listening, the same questions are popping through his head. Okay, who the hell actually is the Notre Dame offensive line? Who cuts the deal? Who signs it? Who speaks for the other people? Can you opt out? Can you opt in? What if somebody else wants? I mean, are you a trade association? Are you a partnership? Are you a corp? What are you? Who gets to ink that deal, Kevin?
Yeah, you know what, and I would love. I'm sure the individuals, unless they form some kind of partnership, I'm sure the individuals have to sign off on this. Either that, or if they formed a partnership or an S-Corp or whatever they may have done, then whoever is designated with that authority to sign would sign it. So that's, I think that part of it is execution. I'd love to know the answers, but that's not showing up in any of the articles at this point.
Well, could it qualify as a trade association?
I think that's iffy.
I do too. I mean, are these guys going to have to pay? Is there a designated leader? Is there somebody that you're counting on?
CEO of Offensive Line Inc.
Well, something along those lines. And are you going to hire? I was going to say an assistant, some young lady. Could be anybody. Could be some guy. And are you going to have somebody? Is there a phone call? Is there a phone number or a website to contact these people if you want to do something for them? Is somebody going to get paid to read those emails? Is somebody going to be paid to answer emails?
There are actually a lot of companies out there that are you know, signing players to representation agreements. I am sure a number of them have sprung up in the last month and might not be the kinds of people you'd want to trust. There are others that have been in the business a long time, representing professional athletes, representing entertainers, and so on, who line up this kind of stuff. And so it's, you know, there's got to be a lot of buyer beware in there.
Well, let me ask you this.
As I also sent you, the starting quarterback for Miami and Florida State went and founded together a joint venture to do just that kind of representation.
There's a bunch of them around. Matter of fact, one of my clients is somebody's really after him to invest in an outfit just like that. But now my question to you is, or my statement would be, if I'm representing you and you're the left tackle, the first thing I say to you is, don't get yourself involved in anything like that because I have better things for you. Is this exclusive?
Well, obviously, from a food standpoint, it's not, because they have two deals.
Well, I mean, there's
really not.
Well, one is just free pizza. Okay, so
one's pizza, but it's pizza endorsement, and the other one is a barbecue endorsement.
I'm gonna start. This may sound, you know, male chauvinistic oinker, but I'm not being that. This is the definite, or the not argument, but question I've had since we had Jordan Bressler. He came on a few times, and I'll bet he's all over these Olympics, and he's a serious marketing guy. His firm does a lot of the, I think they do most of the marketing for the four biggest marathons. And Jordan is one of the brightest, nicest men I've ever come across. He and I used to we had a couple of beers at Ceres, and of course I'm needling him, right? And imagine that, but I don't do it in the needle. I do it to get everything out of his brain, because there was a lot in there that I really needed to know. But I'm going to ask you a question. Once in a while, I meet my buddies downstairs at the guys in exchange and attorneys, and we go to the bar down in our building here, because it's the only one that's open, right? So we sit by the front door, and every night the same two or three, shall we say, easy on the eyes ladies that walk. They must live in the South Loop, and they work downtown. They walk by the bar, and I'm going to say every eye is on male and female. Maybe the females figure out what they're wearing, and the men, who knows what they're thinking. Everybody's eye is on a perfectly nice ass walking by. Now, why shouldn't there be Sophie's Yoga Gym on that ass? Why shouldn't everybody have? I mean, Jordan and I would always quiz him. I'd say, Jordan, you walked over here. It's in your mind, it's a waste of a perfectly good ass. You could add Coca-Cola on your ass. I mean, are we reaching a point where everything you do, every single person, I mean, these ladies draw more eyes just because everybody's in a bar with nothing else to look at, then why shouldn't they have Sophie's Gym on their ass? I mean, I'm trying to be a little bit funny here, but really, I'm asking, does every single thing you do have to have somebody's name on it?
No, of course not.
Well, I mean, this was Bo Schembechler's big deal at Michigan. You guys don't get it. People come to a Michigan football game to get away from all that crap, not to have advertisements pounded at them at high decibel levels while they're here. Of course, Bo died, and his thoughts died with him. I know that if my grandfather, if he ever would have gone, he never watched TV, but if he ever would have gone to a movie and he got a commercial at the movie, he'd have got up and walked out. What did I paid for no commercials. That's why I just paid, you idiots. I mean,
right, and so, you know, but will this bleed into the game itself? I don't know.
Well,
it could, but I also, I mean, you know, certainly, you know, can you advertise in the program? Can you do, you know, all of that kind of stuff? Sure. They're already putting the Nike, Under Armour, Adidas logo, you know, whatever they have. That's all already on the uniforms. They already have... you know, companies like Nike creating special uniforms for certain games.
Yeah, I get it.
You know, so yeah, you know, does it have to be? Apparently it does, because it is.
Well, you reach the point where if you're not doing it, you feel like you're getting robbed. Right? I mean, that's really what it comes down to. I mean,
somebody, if you're not doing it, somebody else is getting a competitive advantage.
Right. And, you know, you go back to the 85 Bears. One of the reasons why they mentally broke up was that, Ditka got all over Jimbo Covert for having an advertising deal that he wasn't concentrating on football. Then Ditka went and got the deal or something like that.
That was part of it, and part of it was that there was a lot of built-in jealousy just among the team about who was getting endorsed.
Well, and how does this?
Who was not? And I do think that bears watching.
Well, no pun intended. I'm going to say that was my list. My next five questions. Okay, who's the offensive line? What if somebody opts out? Says I got a better deal. Now do we talk to that guy? Do we not talk to him? Is it an even split? Do the starters get more? I mean, it's very early in the game. Now, does the defensive line feel like they call up the same place and they go, no, the offensive line got here first. There's no money left for you guys. Now, what does that cause? Does that cause a problem? What if the defensive line gets more? Or there's less people? Or somebody who plays on both? Does he get both or does he get neither? I mean, there's a...
Like I said earlier, what if the coaches tell you you're going to switch position?
Yeah, well, the others...
No, I'm not. That's going to ruin my endorsement deal.
But then you sent me the thing from the two young ladies from Georgia, basketball players. Was it Georgia or something?
Fresno State. But
whatever. It doesn't matter. And they're two very attractive twins that play basketball. All right, so... Now,
and here's the catch with them, just to fill in the blank before you go. They're already big social media stars. They've been doing all kinds of, you know, TikToks, for their whole time, and apparently I haven't seen any of them. I'm not going on TikTok to check, but they're very clever, they're very funny, and because they're both, you know, they're attractive twins and athletes, and they're good basketball players. Interestingly, if you noticed in the picture, they're our numbers 0 and 1, very binary. So that they're already stars. They're stars going into all of this, and that got them a big deal, like with Boost Mobile. So, if you remember back when this was first rolling out, I said, you know, there's going to be very few that become national advertising stars. They have, as has a there's a gymnast at LSU who is the same thing, big social media star, who. Who already had that built in, and she also is very attractive and has a lot going on. I guess TikTok is the forum for letting your personality out. And I hearken back when I sent you that, and I said, imagine Arike Ogunbowale after her junior year when she hit the game winning shots in the national semifinals and the national finals and became a big phenomenon. She's a terrific basketball player anyway, but. I'll divert and then I'll let you come back to the questions. When she was a freshman, I remember I would go to some of the women's games, but I didn't usually cover them. I didn't usually sit in on the press conferences or anything like that. But they played Tennessee and won. Notre Dame beat Tennessee. And it was a snowy night, and I knew the parking lot would be a zoo. So my daughter is with me, and I said, hey, Amy, let's... why don't we go in and just crash the press conference? We have credentials, so crash the press conference.
We have credentials.
Clear out. And I remember freshman Arike Ogunbowale, who had come off the bench and played really well in that game, and about 2 minutes into her parts of the interview, I leaned over to my daughter and said, this girl's going to be a star. She's going to be big because she's got a big personality, beautiful smile, everything you want, and she's really good at basketball. And sure enough, she had tens of thousands of followers on social media. She was on Ellen DeGeneres' show with Kobe Bryant, who was her big hero. She got on Dancing with the Stars, and she couldn't get paid for any of that kind of stuff when she did it. She would have made a fortune on that, and she probably would have made a fortune on endorsements too.
So
that's all the backfill on the pretty girls aspect of this. So go ahead and fire away.
Well, I mean, there are. I don't want to generalize because I don't think you should generalize. I mean, there's going to be students, and when I talk about people who can do all kinds of things. You never knew this guy. Maybe you did, Kevin. My freshman year, our resident assistant was a guy named Rich Hunter.
Oh, yeah, I knew Rich.
And Rich was a, I don't know, he ended up blowing up, having some problems. I don't know. And I don't think life ended well for him, but that's a sad story. But, David, he was a guy that when he was a senior, he not only took a full load of credits, which he took 18 hours, got straight A's, which is really hard to do when they gave out the A minus. Everybody seemed to have a reason to only give you an A minus instead of an A. But anyway, he got straight A's. Notre Dame was a place that prided themselves on teaching all these languages, but by the way, they didn't have a whole lot of teachers in all these languages. So, because he was Lithuanian, he actually taught like two or three classes in Lithuanian. He refereed for the Inner Hall. He was ahead of the referees, and he probably refereed 20 games a week. He ran the senior bar, and he was an RA. And by the way, he was one of these guys that was a 4 hours of sleep dude. You know, in terms of his body motor, the guy could have been a president, you know, of the U.S., because those guys all have huge motors. Most of them have huge motors. But he was a guy like that. So I could see him allegedly being a student, being an athlete with all the time it takes. Oh, by the way, running your marking operation at age, you know, 20. Kevin, this is what you just talked about. What's her name? I can't pronounce her name. Whatever you just talked about her. That's the reason why she should already be playing in a mini pro league and not be at Notre Dame. I mean, I'm going to say 99% of these kids cannot do that while they're a student at all. I mean, I don't think I could have, and I was one of the better ones, students that is. I mean, it's just too much. This chase for the dollar all along the way.
Well, I actually think in many cases the sport plus a full load at school is probably too much.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. I mean, you can't have a summer job. You can't go home. Can't go home in a summer now, can you? For most of these sports, you go for what?
They go home for a little while.
Oh, all right, a couple of weeks. But there's no such thing as going home, having a summer job, showing up, starting practice. You know, the third week of August. That's down the road.
No, not unless you're like Pat Connaughton, which kind of ties back to the basketball discussion at the beginning. Not unless you're Pat Connaughton and you get a chance to go play in the Cape Cod League. All summer and pitch. So, you know, he did get to go away, although he did scrap the Cape Cod League early for the team trip to Europe when he came back and with the basketball team. But yeah, it's a rare circumstance where you really get to do anything else but your sport.
So now they're in school, they're playing essentially a professional schedule, and oh, by the way, they're a business person. How many people and we're also looking for, we're adding yet another coal into the fire. Do you realize that you're this adorable blonde and you're stuck here in South Bend? If you were only at UCLA playing volleyball, I could really make something of you. What's this going to do to the transfer program?
Well, yes and no. One of the big earners is a Nebraska volleyball player. Out of the gate. So I think there's a lot that translates no matter where you are.
Well, it certainly adds to the. I could have you starting at, you know, Whitewater State instead of sitting on the bench here in Wisconsin. And oh, by the way, if you're a starter at Whitewater State, the guy over there is looking for a gorgeous brunette to be the sponsor of his gyms in wherever Sidewater State. I mean, it just adds another. Another something to the mix here, Kevin.
Yeah, I actually, and as you say, UCLA, I'm not sure that Big City is where it's at for these athletes. So if you think about it a little bit, take Chicago, take a Northwestern athlete. They may do very well, getting endorsements around Evanston or maybe even around the North Shore. I don't know if Hecky's Ribs is has signed up the Northwestern offensive line yet, but they have to compete for the local dollar with professional athletes, and they're not going to win that one very often.
See how we're doing the Paul Fauci conversation here. What I meant was not that big cities or small cities are better. It's going to be someplace other than where you are. Now, is that another reason to say that you need to transfer, that you got a bad leg and all that? It's all part of this massive mix that is affecting an 18 or 19 year old's, I'll use the term school day. Call some agents now. I mean, who exactly is running? There's got to be a leader on the offensive line. What if the Mulp's getting a 2.5? Now he's doing it. Who's the guy who put out that could barely pass, and yet he put out the newspaper for Morrissey Hall, because he really cared more about that than his classes. Right? Vince. Are we really sure that the person who's going to put in his mindset to this and is trying to shake out the next dime is the best student or the worst? I mean, right? I mean, we got people on the bubble.
I don't know. You know, there's a lot where it can go a lot of different directions. So you go back to those two quarterbacks at the Florida schools. You know, if I were a business professor and they said I would like this to be my project or even my internship for a entrepreneurship class, I'd be all in for that. You know, I think that could be done really well.
Do you give up?
Used like crazy too, but it could be done really well.
Do you give up a campus space? Do you let somebody run? Do you give up campus space? Does the offensive line get an office in the convo, or where it is now, the Joyce Center? Do you expect people to run this out of their dorm? What about the roommate with the phone ringing all day long and his agents? What does that do to him? I mean, I'm saying, are you going to force the offensive line?
Well, first of all, the phone doesn't ring all day long because they all have all use their cell phones now, so you don't have to worry about being
all right. But
interrupted in the dorm room.
Well, I mean, are we going to make the offensive line go get an office off campus? I mean, these are all questions. SP Futures up 750, and SP Futures down 25. Be right back. The market came right back all the way yesterday on the day as they were down as much on Monday. Very strange. We'll talk about that later, but this is an interesting topic. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, Innovation and Human Resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Mr. Dave Scatino on the board. I'm trying to find a way to ask my two mavens here an interesting question without them cheating and going on like Googling a thing or something. And I can't really find a way because they're sneaky sort of dudes. S&P futures up 650. The NASDAQ futures down 26. Dow futures up 120. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 126.8%, FTSE up 1.6%. Big move there. Gekka around up 83.13. This, the big bounce back here, I don't think, you know, who knows what, and day to day, you never can tell which way things are going up or down. I mean, obviously that's the drill, but I'm going to say that 500 points, 700 point down, 700 point back up is not the sign of a healthy market, in my opinion. Obviously we're healthier today than we were on Monday afternoon, but it's not really what things are supposed to do, but, they are doing it, and I don't know if it's because of the markets are thinner than normal, if it's the news flies back and forth, if it's the Fed getting involved, whatever it is, it's not really what you would call a healthy market normally. Now, in today's world, who knows, maybe it is. Nikkei up 159.6%, Shanghai up 25.7%. Shanghai has been steady to up almost all week. Sang has been down every day, only a little bit today, though, down 34.1%. So we have odd goings on over in Asia as well. Yesterday, Dow was up 549, S&P up 64, so the S&P was back up virtually exactly the day before. NASDAQ up 223, I might have been back even a little more than the day before. Dow did not get back quite as much, but pretty close. Bonds up 2 basis points, 1.23. Bund unchanged at minus 0.40. Japan unchanged at positive, get this, positive 0.009, so just hanging. UK 0.57. We've got oil bouncing back here some, up 82 cents, 68.02. Brent up 92 cents, 70.27. A natural gas up 7 cents, 3.94. And I think I might actually be putting some people's money today in the XLE. I really can't find one of these sectors that I really love, so I'm kind of thinking since oil's coming back down here, maybe the XLE isn't the bad spot. I'm not exactly, as you can tell, I'm not as into it as much as I normally would be, but I think maybe for a little while, as long as I have puts and stuff against it, protecting it, I might try there. But I don't really see a spot here that I just have to be in. I mean, a lot of people are touting this banking in this index, and yet this XLF doesn't seem to really go much anywhere. The last couple of days it's come back, but it was down a bunch on Monday. So maybe that's a good spot. I mean, who knows? But it's very, very difficult now to pick a sector going forward, I think, because we've got some up and some down. We got gold is down $9, 18.02. Again, gold has not been a hedge for inflation yet. Silver up 14 cents, 25.14. And even gold and silver have been going different directions now in the last few days. Copper down a penny at 4.25. Crypto, we've got Bitcoin up 1,700 back to 31,533. It's made back a little bit, but still it's in this range. Not trading near as heavily as it was. David, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Good morning. 6:38 in Chicago. Today's weather currently 68 and cloudy. It's going to be cooler today. 73 is going to be the high and partly cloudy. For our Phoenix listeners, start out this morning 90, partly cloudy. We'll reach 106 with a mix of clouds and sun. Traffic's pretty light this morning. Normal buildups on the Kennedy and Eisenhower and the usual backup on the Stevenson at the Ryan exit. In sports last night, Milwaukee beats the Suns 105-98 to win the NBA championship, first time since 1971. MLB last night, Sox beat the Twins 9-5. Cubs come back to beat the Cardinals 7-6. D-backs win another one, beat the Pirates 11-6. NHL news, the Seattle Kraken expansion draft tonight, which will bring 32 teams to the NFL. Out to the NHL, and NFL training camp starts today this week. Cowboys today and Pittsburgh tomorrow. Back to you, Chief.
The NFL is such an odd organization in some ways with this salary cap, but there absolutely is no cap on ticket prices. You know, so you can lose people due to the salary cap, and in the next letter, they want more money for next year. So you have to continue to pay more and more money for less decent people anyway. This will make 32 teams. So guess who's available in this thing? I'm not Mr. Hockey Maven here, but they put in, they got to put in a list of 30 players selected. One from each NHL team, with the exception of the Vegas Golden Knights, because they're a recent expansion team. Now, if anybody recalls, they made it to the NCAA. Didn't they make the Stanley Cup Finals their first year, Kevin? Because everybody got rid of so many good people in the draft.
I think it was the second year, wasn't it, Kevin?
I think it was.
Yeah, whatever it was, I don't remember if it was first or second. But yeah, they're still good.
Yeah. Now, guess who's on this list? This guy Price, who was the. He just led Montreal back to the Stanley Cup final. Or the Colorado Avalanche captain, Gabriel Landeskog. He's only 28. He's on the list of people you can pick.
Yeah, they're going to probably be better than the Chicago Blackhawks.
Oh, without a doubt. I think without a doubt.
How's the salary cap work for these teams?
No, wait a minute. You beat me to that question. I was going to say, hey, Kevin, do these guys have a salary cap their first year? I'm sure they do,
and that's what would discourage them from taking too many of the best players.
I'm gonna bet that they don't the first year, or it's somewhat above the other guys for like a year or two, just to get them off the ground. I don't know. We'll bet $1 on that. We'll have to find out.
Put David to work here. Right?
Yeah, put David to work here. All right, our question.
Working on it.
Question for you two, cheating mavens. Who were the original six expansion teams out of the six-team NFL and NHL?
Oh, St. Louis, Philadelphia.
Those are the easy ones. Two more easy ones.
Chicago and Detroit.
Weren't the Islanders part of that?
Nope.
Pittsburgh was.
We got Pittsburgh. You got. St. Louis.
Philadelphia, St. Louis.
All right, there's three.
Minnesota.
There's four. Now the next two are hard. Well, one's not so hard, but the other one's like impossible.
Well, there's got to be another Canadian team, so let's see. No. Still not allowing Canadians to be in the Hockey League, eh?
No.
Oh, hell, I don't know.
All right,
you're going to have to get
it. I think it was the Los Angeles Kings.
Good radio.
It was the Los Angeles Kings.
Okay.
And one you'll never guess, it was the Oakland Golden Seals or the San Francisco
Golden Seals? Oh, the California Golden Seals.
California Golden Seals. And that's the one that nobody gets because they didn't last at all. I don't know where they ended up, but they went someplace. But they were one of the originals. And then because everybody kind of confuses most of the teams with the teams that were in the, the one where Bobby Hull went to play, was that the WHL?
WHA.
When they joined the league, that's where all the Canadian teams
came from. Yeah, that was like, Edmonton and Vancouver and some of those teams.
And that's where a couple of the teams here came from, too, in the U.S. There were a couple of U.S. teams in that.
Oh, yeah.
I forget who they were, but yeah, it was a... I mean, they were absolutely convinced that they were going to put hockey on the West Coast, and it was a little bit early, I think, when they did that. But, Philadelphia and Pittsburgh were layups, obviously.
Their projected cap is $81,500,000.
And what is the regular?
And I believe it's regular for each team.
Right, so they just get the regular old cap.
That's what it's saying.
Yep, so they won't be able to load up on all the best players. Some of those teams that left... They're better players, unprotected. They're calculating the risk of who the expansion team's going to take.
Now, did they? Since David's looking at it, did these guys get any, shall we say, intelligent head start? Like the last baseball expansion team, was Arizona, right? And didn't they instead of just having an expansion draft like they did for the Mets and the Houston Colt 45s, if anybody remembers that name. They actually didn't, they hired the guy from the Yankees. What the hell was his name? The quarterback, a really good manager, but he was kind of rubbed people the wrong way. What the hell was his name?
Yeah, I know.
That was a lot of Yankees managers.
Yeah, but David, they hired this guy not to manage the team because the team was 2 years away, but they allowed the Diamondbacks to form minor league teams like 2 or 3 years before the major league team started. So they would actually have a base. And he essentially was able to go out and put the whole organization, and I think they were able to participate in the draft, I'm going to say at least 2 or 3 years before the team started playing. Am I right, Kevin? Where they actually had a whole organization set up and ready to go when the major league team finally, in other words, they just didn't give them 25
people. Yeah, and they needed that. And the guy we're trying to think of is Buck Showalter.
Yeah, and I'm wondering if they did the same thing for this team in hockey. Now, do these guys already have they had a minor league team plan for a while, like for a year or two? I mean, do they have somebody?
Yeah, that wouldn't be hard to do, would it? Because they don't have the same, you know, multi-tiered minor league system.
Right.
No, Tom, I don't believe they did that.
It's really just affiliations that they have, and you know, it's just organized a little bit differently.
See, David doesn't think so. And the next question would be: is there anybody that played NCAA hockey last year that had been already drafted by these guys? And if you look at the Notre Dame,
that's a good question too. And I don't know the answer to that, but I would suspect the answer is yes.
Really? Because then, if somebody's good enough where they could have moved up right away, they actually have to stay in college for a year because there's nowhere to go. Right.
Well, it depends on when they were drafted. If they, you know, would they have been taken in the most recent draft? I guess is the question.
What I'm kind of trying to get to is there a sophomore at Notre Dame or at Michigan that has been drafted 2 years ago by the Kraken? What a name that is, anyway. The Kraken.
I know. Love that name.
They're going to have to do. Is that the name of the owners?
No, it's the Kraken is a mythical character.
Of what?
Come on, Tom. The Kraken?
No, I don't have any kids, so you guys.
Remember, what's her name, the attorney who was trying to investigate the elections, so we're about to release the Kraken, which really never happened.
Oh. I mean, that is not the same as
deep sea creature.
Oh, all right, not the same as the Karen, obviously.
No, not as fearsome.
God. Anywho. So anyway, we got a lot of stuff going on in sports. I'm kind of happy the Bucks won, although I would have been happy either way. I mean, both those teams.
Yeah, I would have been happy either way because I had a Notre Dame interest in either outcome. It would have been great to see Monty Williams get it as the coach, but I'm happy to see Pat Connaughton get it as a player. Pat, you know, is I don't usually talk about favorites while they're playing, but after they're gone, I can talk about it. And you know, Pat was just always a really good guy, a great interview, a good personality, a really good leader. I got to know his family a little bit, and I thought they were fantastic people. So I am sure the Connaughton clan is celebrating and celebrated with a vengeance.
Well, I'm going to say that Monty Williams is certainly a credit to the program or any place he's been to, the coach on.
Yeah, Monty's, and they talked about it a little bit last night. He tragically lost his wife in a car accident
really?
A couple of years ago, and they did, you know, his. I know people that you know, I did not know him, never met him. I know people who knew him and knew his wife Ingrid and thought they were terrific people. There was a recommendation for watching his eulogy as you know, as something that is a great example of class and grace, and also it's out there on YouTube. I may check it out. But you know, people in Phoenix, you know, my son lives out there. People I talk to in Phoenix say he is really. It isn't just a matter of getting talent and playing. That guy has changed the culture of the program out there for the better, and it's showing up in the performance. You know, so much of this, and especially in the professional ranks, it is. You know, you have to be good with tactics. You have to be good with you know, your approach, you know, building a team with an approach to the game, but it is really more about managing the individuals, especially given the number of really big egos that are out there, and to try to, you know, keep a team focused is just an incredible challenge in the pros, and that I believe is why most, not all, but most college basketball coaches who have moved to the NBA have washed out. Is, you know, they can they can lead with authority for the most part in college, and that doesn't get it in the pros. You have to really, you know, develop a culture, get people to buy into it, and make it work, and that ain't easy.
It's a real lesson for, as my grandmother used to say, the armchair quarterbacks never did much. But I'm not accusing people of being that, but if you played a lot of ball, I'm not at that level, I never played, but if you played a lot of ball, you realize that this guy, with Chris Paul, the guy in the State Farm commercials, that guy, if you went out and watched him shoot three-point shots, I'm going to say he damn near never misses in practice. And most of the time during the season, as he's playing regular teams, there's not a whole lot of defense going on, especially in the first half. Those guys are traveling, they're doing this, they're doing that, and they're not exactly looking like an Olympic team out there defensively. But you watch these playoffs. If anybody thinks, when you think of how difficult it is, that guy, to use a nasty sports euphemism, that guy probably went back to the bench without his jack about six times. There were people touching him, grabbing him, every place going for six games. And yet, to separate yourself even a little bit in the fourth quarter after people doing that to you for an hour and a half, and, it's including times and breaks, and to separate yourself and then plunk one in from however far away those guys are, they are incredibly strong. They are incredibly talented. That's not a practice three-point play, Kevin. It just isn't.
Also, an incredibly focused. The level of concentration that you need to maintain, play. It's obvious the guys who can't do that, but the ability to keep that intensity and to really be pushing yourself. Really pushing. It's not just saying I'm hustling. See, I'm running. But it is really pushing yourself as far as you can go. That is an incredible talent to have, or skill to develop is probably the better word, because it really does have to be developed. And that's what separates the guys who are really, really good versus the ones who aren't.
And some people have ability to rise to the occasion. I don't watch the Bulls like Maddie. If Maddie was here, he's an expert on all this. But he'll be back tomorrow, by the way. But, Bobby Portis, the slam on him against the Bulls, I would have to say, was never really one of talent. He's a big, strong guy, and he can be very aggressive. He's not, your three-point guy, wherever, although he can nail a few in. The big slam on him was lack of interest. Kevin, he'd look out there, he looked like he was thinking about, what hot dog he was going to have after the game. They could never get him to focus. All of a sudden he gets on a team that's going someplace. The guy is incredibly focused, and guess what? He had an incredible series. Some people, they're just not, it takes a special kind of person to be an Ernie Banks, to be an MVP 2 years ago in a row on a team that sucks.
I agree with that, but I also agree that that a lot of that does get back to the coach. Do you have coaches who can motivate players to play to their potential game after game after game? And it's always nice when you have a terrific player on your team. When you have Michael Jordan, and Michael Jordan's going to be a guy who self-motivates, and so you can point to everybody else, point everybody else at him and say, if he can do it, you can do it, because he doesn't have to be good. So that helps a lot. But still, it really is, there is something to culture. There is something to, building that accountability into what we do. A different example. And, Tony La Russa has gotten a lot of criticism over the course of the year, some for his tactics, some for some of the decisions he's made, or that one time he didn't know the rules and all. But I'll say this about Tony La Russa. The White Sox have had setback after setback. They've lost their second baseman. They lost two starting outfielders. They've had, their catcher is down for a long time. They've had all of these setbacks, and yet somehow they managed to remain really focused and just go about their business time after time after time. I think that, that's the kind of thing when we talk about having the right leadership that you have to give credit. Maybe it's just random. Maybe he's got a great leader on the bench. I don't know, but I'll tell you this, that they don't give up. What we saw another example of it last night, where they had a big comeback. Both they and the Cubs did, actually. And I suspect Ross is pretty good at this too. He just doesn't have the talent to go with it. But
well, it comes down to
there is something to be said for keeping a team focused and on track.
Well, it's. I mean, David and I were walking in this morning, and I said, "Sacks are. If everybody's hitting, everybody's hitting." Because it's really strange. I mean, I know I actually read some study a couple weeks ago about the idea of somebody protecting the batter ahead of you. How there's no difference in batting average depending on who's hitting behind somebody or in front of somebody. Kevin, I can't say the bigger bunch of BS I've ever read in my life. It makes all the difference in the world. I've pitched softball for 40 years, for God's sake. The difference in how batters act and how they, and how, whether they'll take a pitch or not, if they have somebody behind them that's good or if it's tap Toby, there's a huge difference in how a good hitter, behaves in the batter's box. But
there's also people that'll tell you that there's no such thing as clutch hitting, that everybody hits about their averages. And, you know, that while there may be some statistical truth to that, some people in tight situations tighten up. Some people stay relaxed in tight situations. I think that translates into performance.
I think some people...
some of the expertise out there is questionable.
Well, I know it... At pitching, I mean, I got to be better in tight situations when, I got better, which was part of it. But I actually had the attitude, I mean, it became almost a math attitude, Kevin. I said, you know, okay, my guys are going to make the plays. They need 3 runs. If I don't walk anybody and I make every pitch pretty hard to hit, that means 6 or 7 hits. That's really hard to do. The pressure's really on them, not me, if I keep my head together. If I do my job, I can put the pressure back on them. And once you get that realization that the pressure's not on you, it's really on them, because it's harder to hit than it is to pitch, all of a sudden, you know, the ship swings the other way. But Billy Hamilton had a very interesting interview this morning. He goes, I love this team. He goes, we never give up. He goes, if I'm on the bench, if I'm not playing, he goes, I feel like I'm just as much a part of the game as if I'm in there, because I'm one with these guys. He goes, I've never felt this way before. You know, there's something to be said for that. And I don't know if that's Abreu or if it's a couple of the guys on the team or what it is, but there's leadership there other than La Russa. And I don't know if they're all kind of the same age or what it is, but there clearly is something going on in the Sox.
Good leaders, one of the things about good leaders, good managers, good, you know, whatever you want, they learn how to lead through other people. Because when you know, with me, if you work for me, you're taking orders. Now, you may like working for me, and I may be good at motivating you and recognizing your contributions and all of those things that you're supposed to do in a leadership role, but it's still orders. But when you learn who are the leaders on this team and how can I deliver my messages through them, how can I, you know, build the attitude through those people, and you really have to go out and enlist them, and you get them to buy into the program, because when they buy in, everybody else buys in. I was talking about Pat Connaughton earlier in the show. When Connaughton was at Notre Dame, Bray would just work through Connaughton. If he got Connaughton to buy in, everybody else bought in. They loved him. But they also knew that was a guy who never took a playoff, and who was very unimpressed by anyone who did.
Yeah.
and they would hear about it.
Hey, real quick, Kevin, just real quick, because there's somebody else I want to say something nice about. The guy who just won the British Open, he's from Japan?
He's not from Japan. He's from Southern California.
Well, he's Japanese, but the Japanese think he's from Japan.
He was born and raised in Southern California.
I understand that, but they still, he's the first Japanese American to have ever...
No, you're confusing him with Hideki, maybe the first Japanese American, but the first Japanese man to win a major tournament was Hideki Matsuyama.
Well, this guy won two this year. It's the same guy.
Yeah. No. He's won two tournaments, yes. He's won two major tournaments.
Yeah, he's won two major tournaments.
I don't think he counts as a trailblazer when you're born and raised in the United States.
Well, whatever college he went to, he did an interview yesterday on CNBC. The guy, anybody would have hired him in any job. The guy is articulate, know everything about the market. I mean, where did he come from? I mean, this dude, I've never seen a better interview on TV. This guy knew about the market, he knew about the politics. He was as up to stuff as if he was on Stocks and Jacks, for God's sake, and he's a golfer.
Oh yeah, he's an incredibly bright guy, you know, that, I mean, that's part of it is, you know, he obviously, and I know, you know, when it comes to athletics, the University of California is not as nearly as selective with the athletes as it is with regular students. But in fact, you know, it's still a really good, highly regarded school. And so he had access to a terrific education and took full advantage of it while he was there. And he probably arrived, you know, he was probably a really good student when he was in high school, and he probably really has developed that. But I think he's going to be a big star.
Well, if you could, you know, all he talked about was how he thought golf was great for young people, was great for this, and if he could expand, golf participation among young people, if they liked him, how it was a big part. I mean, really interesting stuff, not just about, you know, yeah, I made this putt type of thing. Anyway, I thought he was pretty impressive. Kevin, we got a dash here, bud. SP Futures up 350, NASDAQ Futures down 40. We come back with Mr. Russell Rhodes. We'll talk all about the market. A lot to talk about there. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allies, Mr. Dave Scatino on the board. S&P Futures up a deuce, as they say, up two. NASDAQ Futures down 41. You don't hear that term used too often anymore, a deuce.
No, you do not at all.
It's because $2 ain't worth much. It's gonna be, you got to come up with more than a deuce if you want anything. Just saying. We have Russell?
We do not have Russell at the moment.
Well, he'll be calling in a second. We've got individual stocks in the Dow. We've got Boeing up 95 cents. American Express up $1.82. American Express is banging up and down basically on the COVID news, which is because obviously the... a lot of travel involved in American Express, although I think they're making more inroads into just regular sales, aren't you, David? I mean, I don't know how many people. I guess most people still use Visa or MasterCard for regular stuff.
Most of the people I know use Visa.
Well, they made a big breakthrough into the retail part when they were the Costco
right
only card, but now that divorce was what, 3 years ago?
Yeah, a few years back. Yeah.
And Citigroup ended up with the Costco thing. I mean, you just wonder what, you know, it's not even on these things and how much these merchants are willing to pay. And, you know, that's kind of an interesting,
when was the last time you were in a Costco?
I'm still a member. I go once in a while. The, you know, where I go is if, we have any kind of a, there's one out by Audrey, so if she has a bunch of people over,
right, and that's the one we go to.
You go over there and you grab, you know, something. You grab the 50 cookies for a price. But The one in Lincoln Park, I don't think I've been into in a long time. I mean, you know, actually, I still go to Sam's once in a while. When was the last time you were to Sam's?
We are not a Sam's member. We are the Costco members, which my wife seems to constantly be at.
Well,
we buy everything in bulk.
Well, it's Sam's is a little more blue collar, so the people in Costco think they're much more upper crust.
I'm going to have to disagree with you. But you can get a hot dog and a Coke for a dollar that people say is not bad. Not that I've ever done that.
So you don't think Sam's is...
I don't know enough about Sam's to have an opinion on it.
You still got the song going here. I don't know if you know that or not.
That's all right. Don't anyone like it?
No, I love the song. Just saying. But the difference in the two... I mean, you know how the two started differently. I mean, Costco was after Sam's, I believe.
Right.
And remember the original one, the Warehouse Club?
The Warehouse Club. Wow, yeah. I forgot about that.
It was... and they were... there was one near me on the north side, and there was one... where the Menards is now on 87th in Harlem.
I think I got Kevin. Hold on a second.
All right. When Sam started, and one of the reasons why they have not, Russell, we're talking about the difference between Sam's and Costco. How are you?
Sam's and Costco?
Yeah.
It's like Target and Walmart.
Well, see, now you're an upper crust guy. You like the Costco better, but.
I like the Costco and the Target.
That's because you can buy caskets at the Costco.
Buy anything there.
I already did, and I'm using it as a pool to cool off in this summer. I also got a tarp lining while I was there.
Oh, God.
Much cheaper than buying the hot tub that they had over in the corner.
Well, for those of you that maybe aren't as... There was a Sam's right where David and I grew up, Evergreen Park, and my mom was a member. So I was going to Sam's like from the day they opened. And
mm-hmm.
And they were designed really as sort of a warehouse club, and I'm gonna guess that the first year over 50% of their business was to other businesses. That you could get if you had a tax ID, you didn't pay any tax there. So everybody who owned like a convenience store, a gas station, those kinds of things. Plus, if you were one of those people, because we were members, Scott, PTI was a member way back. We actually got the businessman's hours, where my brother would go mm-hmm. there at 7 in the morning. Regular people could go at 10, but if you were the businessman, you could go at 7. And you should see these guys with cart after cart stacked with, you know, water and Coke and you name it. They would outfit their entire, you know, gasoline convenience store. And I'm gonna guess that over 50% of their business was to other businesses when they first started.
Oh, I'm sure it was.
Which is a totally different model than Costco. Costco, I don't know. I don't think you can even use a. Maybe you can. That you can use a your own tax ID if you're gonna, you know, buy 50 cases of Coke or something. I don't know. I'm gonna say I've never seen anybody do that. But maybe you can. But there are no hours that you can go before other people. So Costco has always been an end user kind of place.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go into Sam's, there's a couple aisles where you swear you're in the restaurant depot, you know.
Yeah,
commercial.
I think it's mostly restaurant people.
Well, but I mean, yeah, and then they've kind of morphed over. Plus, they're next to a Sam's usually. Plus, they don't want to compete totally with the Sam's. I mean, not the Sam's, the Walmart. They're next to Walmart, so they've kind of had this, you know, odd identity because clearly the small businesses. When you say when Sam's business goes down, it's because the small businesses have gone down. I don't think they do anywhere near that kind of business for those people as they used to. Anyway, just saying. So, Russell, the markets. What the hell? I said earlier, and I lobbed this out as nothing more than an opinion that a market that goes down 700 one day and up 700 the next is not my idea healthy. I don't know.
And that's the kind of stuff that usually happens near tops. We start to see, those of us that are old and have witnessed all kinds of stuff, you do see excess volatility in both directions when we're kind of topping out.
And the
way that VIX has acted the past couple of days, where it just did not want to break 20 until late in the day yesterday, I think that indicates that not everybody's buying into yesterday's bounce.
I would agree with that. What if I was mentioning the other day, and this is one of those things where I really hope I'm wrong. Russell, and I don't want to talk about individual stacks, but I will because they're buying somebody. It seems to me a lot like 99 in the sense that I was saying that I was an OEX trader, and if I go over this again a little bit, I guess I'm sorry about that if somebody listened both times, but in my world were the top essentially 100 stocks. Not that I traded the stocks, but that's what, I mean, I traded what I consider to be the market. There was no reason for me to be a stock picker, but obviously as the 90s wore on, it became pretty obvious even to the dummies among us, meaning me, that there was this whole other world out there of, quote, stocks that were going up that weren't Exxon, that weren't IBM, that weren't GM, those kinds of things. And a lot of the, I'll use the term play, or a lot of the action was in those stocks. You know, it was the dot bombs, the Cisco's, the Oracle's, and all the rest of them that didn't even survive. It was almost like this, I won't say the world's second tier, because they were trading higher than the first tier, if there is such a thing as a tier. But that's where the action was. Those are the ones that were running up and down every day. And some of them are still around. But it was really obvious that even though the stuff I was trading might have been a little overvalued, you know, with the Fed pouring money in for Y2K and all that stuff, it was nothing like the other ones where Cisco was, you know, 12 times revenue, that kind of thing. I mean, you know, so it was just, and Cisco was nowhere near the worst. I mean, Cisco was a real company. There was companies that didn't have anything other than a name that were trading God knows what. And now it appears to me that sort of the same kind of thing has happened. As much as, you know, criticism I give the Fed, I think most of the stocks in the market, if we just stay steady for a while, and the economy does get better, and you know, they start dropping down the deficit a little bit, and people start paying some taxes on money they've earned, not higher rates, that kind of thing, that we might actually on the higher end stuff, the stuff that I used to trade and still trade for a lot of my clients, I think we could actually escape this without a real problem. I mean, it'll be touch and go, but then I look at these other stocks and I see this. I'm not asking anybody to sell anything. I see this Zoom paying almost $15 billion nominally for a company, all stock. And I look at the value of Zoom, and it's like $4 billion, maybe. Yet their stock is going to somebody's going to take $15 billion nominal of this stock. I'm going to say Zoom can no more write a $14 billion check than I can. And they have almost as bad of an idea. No bank would ever lend them $15 billion. Yet they're trading this, I use the term scrit, for this other company. I mean, how many stocks are there around that are really 30 times higher than you and I would ever even be remotely interested in the place? And I don't see how those guys escape unscathed. I really don't.
Well, you started out with the 1999 comparison, and that really is where we're at. But you know, the stocks are hyped to a certain point, but a lot of the stocks that got hyped to a certain point, like Zoom, are the ones that really did benefit from kind of a shift to work from home, and which a lot of people think is going to become permanent, whereas, you know, the internet thing was just a bunch of really goofy companies that we were making up valuation methodologies for.
Okay, I understand.
How many times did people look at a website? There was no money in having your website looked at in the 90s. Now, you know, maybe you can say that you're generating some advertising dollars or something. But it was, I mean, at least there's some sort of fundamental shift that some of these things are based on. That doesn't mean that they're way, way, way ahead of themselves, but Zoom still has a solid business.
Well, I agree.
Pets.com didn't have a solid business.
What I'm saying is, I get that. I mean, and I actually like the company, but I love your cardigans when you come in. I'm not going to give you a grand for one. I mean, that's one of the, out of all the things that I think if I could ever give one lesson in investing for people, and it goes against some of the you know, the wise old sages that are older than us. There's going to be people that have been very successful in the market, and they say, buy what you know, buy the companies you like. There's nothing wrong with that, Russell. I mean, if you think you know, Tide works well for your clothes, you know, that's fine. You should buy Tide and that whatever the competition is. I get that part. And I think that that's actually is very good advice. But I also think as a trader, everything in this world, except for maybe, you know, family members, has a buy and a sell price. I mean, you buy your home, you love it. Okay, is the price rackets up, you buy it for $400,000 and 2 years later, somebody offers it you $1.5 million for it and you go, man, I don't love it $1.5 million worth. I mean, everything has, just because you like Zoom, I'm going to say I like it at $70, but it's trading $370. I guess I'll wait a while. It's the nicest thing I can say, and maybe someday it will be worth, in my mind, $370. But, I mean, I thought Procter & Gamble is one of the best run companies in my lifetime around. They're the only people, maybe not the only, but the only real example I know of, Russell, that can have essentially competing brands that somehow or another the management manages to put good people in all of the product lines, even if they're competing against each other, and they all manage to do well in those product lines, which is incredibly hard to do. I mean, McDonald's, every time they have a Mexican place, they can't put anybody good in charge at a Mexican place because it might interfere with the McDonald's or something. They can't even handle two places, much less Procter & Gamble. So I've always thought Procter & Gamble had a 20% good management premium on the place. And I love the company. I just never bought it. I just always thought it was a little too high. I mean, I think I can learn from the people who, if they like something, they just buy it. But they could learn maybe from you and me that says, no matter what you have, I love that house, but I don't love it at $500,000 worth if it's a $300,000 house, even though I love it. I mean, there's some discipline that you need to have to where you're allowed to look at the numbers and say, yeah, this place is going to grow, but it's not going to grow that fast. I mean, really? Right?
In reality, this becomes too difficult for the average person to do. But in reality, what you should do is you should take a look at a company and figure out what you think it's worth, and then go check out the stock price.
That's exactly right.
And if again, I know that not the way people function. The first thing you do, what I did when you brought up Zoom is I pulled up a quote. So I had automatically skewed and anchored my thinking about Zoom.
Well, right. Well, the one I did a lot of...
Whereas if you had just given me the numbers and kind of blocked out, you know, Zoom's name, I might have been able to back into what company it was. But if you had given me all kinds of projections based on recent growth, and you know, I would start poking holes in those growth projections if you extrapolate them out, and probably come up with something much less than 370.
Well, plus you also get one of the most amazing things in the industry, Russell, and I can never put my finger on it, but I'd love to, is the day collectively everybody's tone changes for a place where it gets valued now as a retailer versus a growth company. I mean, one of the first stocks that this started from was eBay, right?
Uh-huh.
The thing was trading astronomically high. Well, back when they, in my opinion, but I went back and I think originally didn't they charge everybody like a buck a trade or something before it went higher? They charged was like a dollar every time you sold, you know, some trinket on eBay. It was a dollar.
There was kind of a sliding scale depending on what you were selling.
Whatever the numbers were when they first started, and I saw where the stock was valued, and I went through and I think I needed every man, woman, and child in the U.S. to make like 4 eBay trades a year to make the thing, in my mind, worth where it was trading. But it was considered a growth company. It was new. I mean, of course, they had PayPal that they shoved out, so they had some serious innovation, right? So it wasn't like they were idiots. They weren't. They were a really good company. Still are, I think. And then, by the way, they came up with PayPal, which was worth a fortune, right? It was worth probably more than eBay. I mean, they were, but at some point one day you walk in and, hey, wait a minute, eBay's traded, now everybody's trading it like it's, you know, it's pennies or coals, for God's sake. It's valued like a retailer. What happened to the massive? I mean, you just wonder one day when everybody's going to walk in and say, "Yeah, this Zoom is a great company." But buy it. What they do? They do meetings and they make you know, $100 million a year. Okay, they're worth X. I mean, all of a sudden people just decide that someplace, okay, they're just a routine now. They're just Macy's. They're just a retailer. They're just an oil company. They're no longer, you know, running around the ridge finding new holes to drill. They're just a regular oil company. The day that valuation changes, that's what I really would love to predict just once, and I've never been able to do it yet. I mean, you maybe have. But, I mean, when people's opinion of a place changes, that's a, you know, there's a huge difference between being traded as an innovative, you know, once-in-a-lifetime company versus a regular old retailer, right?
Yeah, and they grow into, I'm actually doing, I'm looking at old eBay numbers while you're talking, and they basically grew into the market cap that they have now, and they've got a PE ratio of 15. They are a retailer.
Yeah, they are a retailer.
Yeah.
I mean, early on, but go ahead, I said early on, it had to be 100 or 200, that PE ratio.
Oh, easily. And the way you value the things like that, and it's almost like a shotgun approach. You just try to figure out what you think, how much are they going to earn over the next 10, 15, 20 years? And are they going to grow into that or not? I eventually Zoom may grow into 370, but there's going to be a long time where the fundamentals catch up with the valuation.
Well,
it's a dull period of time.
Well, that's right. I mean, and part of that, your ability to wait, or your willingness to wait, gets back to interest rates. I mean, if your interest rate as a savings account in 1978 was 12%, you didn't wait for anything, Russell. Now it's 0%. You're willing to wait. I'm willing to wait, right? I'm not getting anything anywhere else. I might as well put my money in Amazon, and if it's going to be 10 years from now, they send me a big fat dividend check. It may well be worth waiting because I got nowhere else to put it, right? Really, I mean, risk-free. Well, when do you think that's going to change? I don't know if you've been spotting these Fed numbers. Last week, there were $125 billion they put in. So now the $130 a month they're talking about is chump change to what they're actually doing. I'm getting the feeling that they have to pour in more and more to get to the same place. I mean, am I wrong there or no?
Oh, most definitely. It's like trying to hold back a flood of things coming at you and having to throw in more and more and more at it to make sure that you stem, you know, the reality of some of the valuations that we need to be at. And I just don't get why they feel the need that, why do we have to prop the stock market up?
I don't know.
What's the other side of it? Yeah, before, everybody would say, well, Powell is propping up the stock market so Trump gets reelected.
I think the people in charge of this country, I'm getting more and more like a conspiracy theorist. The people who are really in charge are maybe the 10 or 12 largest corporations and maybe the five biggest families. I don't know who the hell they are, but somehow or another, we're really, I mean, last night, somebody asked me, they go, what do you think of, what all these guys are doing, you know, the fact that everybody has all this money they're handing out to people. And I said, there's going to be, you know, my funny thing from the trading floor was there's three kinds of people in the world. What, some people make things happen, some people watch things happen, and most people wonder what happened. I don't even heard that word, Russell, but I think with all this stuff that's coming out, with people getting checks in the mail and everything, there's roughly three kinds of people in this world. One is that they're going to have to pay back in taxes a hell of a lot more than they ever got in these checks in the mail. Yeah. There's going to be some that are about even, and there's going to be some that never have to pay back virtually anything of what they just got. And I have a feeling that most of the people we know are in group number one, that we're going to end up paying for the $3,000 or whatever most people got over the next 20 years. They're going to be paying back way more than that in taxes to pay it back. I look through the people who got all this money from the PPP in Illinois, and I went through, you know, some percentage of it. I mean, there's 600,000 firms that got money, so I guess I didn't go through all of them. But some of the stuff, I know those people are never coughing up that money back. I mean, some of the restaurants that I go to that I was so happy with them that they that they made it through, and now I realize that they had their best year ever last year, and they're never paying that dough back. Who's kidding who? I'm not saying they have to. It was forgiven. I get that part. But in terms of the money has to go back to the government somehow. I mean, the $3 trillion they spent last year over what they took in, they're going to get it someplace, somewhere. Right, Russell? I mean, go ahead.
And I've always assumed that part of the way it's going to get paid back, so I really do think we're going to inflate our way out of it.
Well,
younger me would be absolutely shocked that you and I are so nonchalantly throwing around trillions of dollars.
Right.
You know, I mean, a billion was something that was mind-boggling when I was never even thought about possibly being a billionaire when I was growing up. Thought about trying to become a millionaire, which is really not, this sounds so snotty, but really not that big of a deal in this day and age, depending on where you live.
Well, it depends on if you're part of the haves. If you're part of the 10 percenters, I'm not going to call you 1 percenter. If you're part of the 10 percenters, that somehow has a really good job, if you're tied in anywhere with government, you can get to that $1 million number relatively easy over a lifetime.
Now, if you manage your finances correctly,
but to stick on the
government debt thing, my assumption, we had pretty big debts coming out of Vietnam and having funded the Vietnam War, and a lot of that got inflated away.
In the late 70s. I don't.
So I'm afraid that that's going to end up being our solution.
Plus, the
other thing is nobody cares. Do you really think that the average American cares how much debt the federal government's taken on?
We went through this. One of the times I was on a Jonas Pizzito show, and I doubt if I'll ever get asked back. She basically said that she didn't have any debt, and I'm sure she doesn't. And I said, "Well, John, look at the city was in all kinds of debt when Ram came in. Now they still are, right? But say when Ram came in his first, but a city has to allegedly have a balanced budget. Now, of course, they can do all kinds of tricks with cash accounting and so forth, but." So the first term, he raised fees that were essentially got him to 45% tax increase. That's how many fees they kicked up. And so then the second term, they raised the taxes roughly about 50%. So essentially, in his term, he doubled the property tax. I said, so the people in the city are realizing that they can't just, that a debt of the city is really their debt. Right. And now the federal government, I mean, you're getting it because the bill's coming in the mail and it's being basically rammed up your behind. Okay, now the federal government has yet to do that. And you're right, they're trying to inflate stuff out. But again, inflation falls on different people different way. I'm going to say that you having you're a professor, I'm going to guess there'll at least be some cost of living increases by being a professor at a university. Probably not one-to-one, like the steelworkers used to have or something, but it'll be something. If inflation's 10% this year, you'll get a 5% bump without even that being without them even liking you. They'll give everybody something.
Yeah.
You own a home, so you're gonna catch the positive there. What you're not gonna catch this time, at least not yet, is the interest rates. In my mom, when this happened last time, my mom and dad had money in the bank. They were at least even or maybe ahead on their savings. Now that's not going to happen. Everybody with $1 million. I mean, if you have $1 million right now in the bank this year, at the end of the year, I'm going to say that when our guys are through lying to us, they're going to say the inflation this year, let's call it 10%. Last month was 0.9. 0.9 times 12 is what? That's over 10%, right? The way I count it. So let's say it's 10%. So if Russell Rhodes has $1 million in the, the West Suburban 1% or savings bank, the end of the year, guess what? You got 900,000. Right?
Yeah.
So right now, if you weren't still working as a professor and doing other stuff where you keep an eye on it and you weren't still investing, you would be taking, I'm going to say, a $100,000 hit this year. Now, at Pullman, I was not part of the union, so I took a 4% or 5%, 6% hit every year because, and I didn't own a house. So I was one of the, quote, losers in the last go-around.
Uh-huh.
My parents owned a home, and they had money in the bank. They were covered in the bank, and by the way, the home went up. So they were slight winners last time. They would not be winners this time. House would go up, but they're not getting anything in the bank. So this is very uneven. And the uneven part is what's, I think the people who are charging around in Pilsen and those kinds of areas that are working hard, making 35 grand a year, there's no way on earth that in the next 2 years they're going to be making 55 or something like that, or 50, making up for the last 10 years. So we're already starting to see the winners and the losers. And I think the Fed is making absolutely sure that the people who own stocks are winners until they can't anymore. Because nobody cares until the market goes down. Then you're going to see, you know, then all of a sudden the wailing and gnashing of teeth is going to come flying out. Because right now, as long as people have their 401k going up to the extent that people would have those as much as they used to, and to the extent that government workers who elect seemingly people all over because they all vote, as long as they have their cost of living increases. I mean, Russell, you and I can put on a chalkboard in 30 seconds who all the winners are here and all the losers, right? Right now, the winners are the ones with the political power right now. Or where am I wrong here?
No, you're not wrong. Not wrong at all.
S&P futures up 9, NASDAQ futures down 20. At the end of the break, tell me where this market's going and when. Russell, you really have to tell me, when do I short these bonds? It's got to be when, not if. But boy, last few weeks have not been the time to do it. We'll be right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of HomeSource Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You could reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, North Bay Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howie. He's Mr. Russell Rhodes, the Professor Russell Rhodes. Well, I think he's got to be, we haven't actually seen the PhD, but he's got to be getting really, really close. He's been close like forever. We'll ask him about that. When do I get to go to this graduation?
Oh, I'm not going to the graduation.
I didn't say you had to go. I just want to go.
You can go if you want to. I'm not going to. I've never been to one of my graduations.
I'll take a picture of you, the spot in line that should have been you.
Okay.
If I can figure out how to work my camera and my phone, but you can teach me how to do that. S&P futures up 11. NASDAQ futures down 12. Dow futures up 132. Over in Europe, we've got DAX up 105. It's 0.7%. It's a little down from when we looked last time, but still up there. FTSE's the one with the big move. It's up 102. That's 1.5%. These guys have been up and down all week with us. Kekaran up 77, 1.2%. Over in Asia, maybe Russell can give us an insight as to why Japan and China are moving in different directions sometimes now, which is, matter of fact, more often than not. Today, the Nikkei is up 159.6%. They've been very volatile the last 2 weeks. Shanghai up 25. These guys have been positive. Even the days we've been really down here, they've been unchanged. That's up 0.7. Hang Seng, however, has been down almost the whole time. Now, I don't know if that's because, you know, our administration said be careful about Hong Kong. I don't know. Again, Russell can opine on that. They're down 34.1%, so stay unchanged there almost. Yesterday, Dow was up 549 after Monday being the other way. S&P up 64. I think that was actually up more than we were down on Monday. NASDAQ up 223, at least as much as we were down on Monday. Bonds, up 3 basis points to 1.23. Again, way down from the 1.7 something where I was predicting we might actually make it to 2 points. So much for that prediction. The Bund unchanged at minus 0.41. Japan, positive 0.009. So they're wavering on the flat line. Oil, $1.29. That's 2%. 68.49. Still, got a ways to go to that 75 number was a few weeks ago. Brent up 136, 70.71. Natural gas up 7 cents, 3.94. Arbob up 2 cents, 2.15. And we've got gold down 10 bucks, 18.01. Gold just cannot get moving. Silver up 11 cents, 25.10. Copper unchanged at 4.26. And we've got Bitcoin with a rally here back up over 30,000, 31,573. It's up 1,700. And again, this will be as soon as they can find these people, this will be the biggest boon the government ever had. Everybody made money on Bitcoin's got to pay. Everybody who lost money gets 3,000. They get to take off 3,000 for the rest of their life. Good luck with that. David, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
7:37 in Chicago. Weather currently is 68 and cloudy. It's going to be a cooler one. 73, partly cloudy, will be our high. For our Phoenix listeners, it's 90 degrees, partly cloudy today. It will reach 106 with a mix of cloud and sunshine. Traffic's not as bad today. Usual build-ups on the Eisenhower, Kennedy, and the Stevenson due to the long-term forever construction, as I would say. Sports. NBA last night. Milwaukee beats the Sun to win their first NBA championship since 1971. In Major League Baseball, Sox come back to beat the Twins 9-5. The Cubs also make a comeback in the ninth inning to beat the Cardinals 7-6. Diamondbacks beat the Pirates 11-6. In the NHL news, the Seattle Kraken expansion draft tonight, which will make it 32 teams in the NHL. And NFL training camp starts this week. Cowboys sign coming today and Pittsburgh tomorrow. Back to you, Chief.
So what were Jack Brickhouse's great line about the Cubs? Anybody can have a bad century?
Yeah.
So the Bucks had a bad 50 years. What can you say? They've actually had some pretty good teams along the way. They just haven't won. They've had some good players. So, Russell, what is, if you were an investor, which I know, I mean, I don't want to give the whole history, but I know you know an awful lot about this. What exactly is going on with Hong Kong, with Chinese investments? We talked a little bit about Didi last week. I mean, is this something people should stay away from? I mean, right now, people here could invest fairly easily in Hong Kong, not so much on the mainland, right? What is the administration telling us we should stop doing them? And I have some people that are in ETFs from China and Hong Kong. I mean, should I tell them get the bleep out or what? I mean, where are we with this thing? I can't put my hands around it.
I think the geopolitical risk. I just want to stay away from them. You know, I think that's why they've been lagging other markets over in that region, just because you don't know what their government may do next. You know, they keep changing. I know it's a slightly different market, but they keep changing the rules on whether or not you can be a Bitcoin miner in China. So, and most of the people that had been mining Bitcoin in China, they actually leased their equipment. So their revenue source just went away, and there's a ripple effect around that one. So whenever their markets get into the slightest bit of trouble, they'll change the rules on you. And you don't want to be around when they change the rules on you. You know, like we're going to ban long selling for the next 5 days to make the markets go up. They'll do silly things like that. And I just don't think people want to have the exposure to a government that will do that to what are supposed to be somewhat free and open markets. And they continue to change the rules in Hong Kong, which would make me a bit reluctant to even invest there now. I've talked about this before, where SIBO was sending me to Hong Kong twice a year. And in the 6 years that I annually went over there, you could see mainland China creeping in already. So you ask in the first half hour, what's that tipping point where people start to pay attention to what should be the normal valuation for the stock? I mean, what's the tipping point where investors realize that there's extra risk investing in anything that has exposure to the Chinese government, which can change the rules on you at the last second?
How do we contrast what you just said? And you're not giving investing advice. You're just giving observations that this it looks a little more dangerous than it did 2 years ago. I mean, I don't see how anybody can really refute that, Russell. I mean, you could say it's 20% more dangerous, but the Hong Kong market has dropped 50%, so I think it's still a good buy. That I can get. There's some at least thought process behind it. And if the next thought is, but by the way, I've got a guy with a $10 million portfolio and I just put $100,000 in Hong Kong, well, then I really get it, right? I mean, then we're saying that this might still be an okay place to be, but by the way, I'm gonna step in with not even the big toe, the little toe. How do you contrast that? And I don't want to give, well, I guess I will, because they're the ones that went on national TV. And so how do you contrast that to a Kathy Woods, Miss Star out of wherever she's from? And I happen to think she's pretty bright. I like the lady, but she's all over these new stocks and everything in these Chinese stocks. And she actually will opine that, in my mind, it's really dumb for the Chinese leadership to do these crazy things to the market and screw Jack Ma and put this Didi in a bad spot and all those kinds of things. So I think they won't do it going forward because I don't think it's a good idea. So therefore, you should feel okay in investing over there. I'm saying, what did you just say? You imparted your logic to a dictator and said, at the end of the day, you're right, he's wrong, and he's going to come around to your way of thinking. So go ahead and put your money over there. I can't imagine giving that message to people, to anybody. I would give that message to somebody at a bar, let alone on this show or on national TV. How does somebody say something like that, Russell?
Somebody must be writing them a check to say something like that. You know, I have a real hard time getting exposure to a country that does some of the things that they do, you know, as far as restrictions on really wealthy people, restrictions on how their markets are functioning from day to day. I don't think anybody, you know, I don't think anybody would trade options at one of the exchanges in the U.S. if there was even a small possibility of them shutting down the option market for a couple of weeks because the government doesn't like the direction that things are going. Plus, I think there's a lot of underlying problems within China. I know that they've been given a lot of loans to individuals that just are not getting paid back over there.
Whatever happened?
So there might be some sort. There are multiple things to be concerned about with respect to investing over there. And then the final thing is, I know from how the markets acted that there was this feeling that Biden was going to roll back everything that Trump had done in confronting China, and Biden has not done that.
No, he has
not. One area that they kind of stuck with.
Russell, two questions, and these are tough ones, I think. One is, why do you think that when Trump came in, he was going to be the be-all, end-all for steel companies, and all he did was go straight down after he came in, and Biden was going to be the whole world to electric cars and everything, and all they've done is go down since he came in. I mean, what is it? Just the hype was more than the, you know, sell the rumor.
Yeah,
you buy
the rumor and sell the actual news.
Well,
I think those are prime examples of that.
Well, we talked a little bit earlier about the and one of the reasons why I love doing the show is that I really do think everything's the same subject to a certain extent. I mean, now we're talking about offensive line people, you know, getting marketing deals at these colleges and so forth, which I'm not against necessarily. I just wonder how it's all going to play out. I just the difference in my lifetime in the business, it used to be a really big deal to be listed on the New York Stock Exchange. And now, for whatever reason, those guys, wait a minute, we don't have any voting shares in, what is it, Amazon or Google. We don't have anything in Baidu, but we'll list that too. And we're going to list this Didi. We don't really have anything there either. I mean, when people can stop counting on these places to at least do some sort of due diligence, does that mean, I mean, it would be different, Russell, if the New York Stock Exchange would put a headline in the journal, or I'm showing my age, but a headline in the journal, or send out a tweet saying, don't think for a second that we keep an eye on any of these stocks that we list here. We do it just for the money. It's all on you. If they were to do that, I almost don't care. But to sneak around and have people like me still think that these guys might actually be doing some due diligence and then not being, I mean, it's a sneak job to that. You know, it's like, I guess I don't really care if the FINRA doesn't want anybody to be able to, you know, drop a paper stock off at a brokerage firm and sell it, even if you might have got it because you were a consultant at the place or whatever. I guess they know more than me. Maybe these people have been money laundering. I don't know. But take it on yourself. FINRA says, if you got a paper shares of stock, next time you go in the can, use that instead of the TP because it's worth nothing. Okay, I don't mind. If they want to do that, that's their business. But why do they shove it down the pipe to where I have to explain to some client, no, we can't take your paper stock? Well, why is that? It's nothing wrong with it. I understand that part. But for whatever reason, they've got you branded as a money launderer. I don't even know what that is, but let's do it. I get that part. I mean, why don't they, the credibility gap is just huge, Russell. Let's just be truthful for once, right? This stock has no voting rights. You're getting, I mean, I guess if you really would have looked, you'd know that in Baidu, what did you get? An income stream out of Bermuda, and Jack Ma had all the personal assets of the place, something like that? And you had no voting shares? I guess if you'd have looked, you could have found that out, but if you just would have said, oh man, it's going on the New York Stock Exchange, they must be a real stock. I don't know. I mean, I guess there's a responsibility for you to look, but where do you come down on all this? We just kind of keep growing in this other direction here, and all of a sudden we seem to have nothing sometime.
Well, I mean, I think this all goes back to the financial exchanges becoming public companies and now having shareholders to answer to, as well as investors. And when I say investors, I mean the people that invest in stocks that trade on the exchange. So you have to loop all the way back around to what's their incentive? You know, their incentive as a private member-owned entity, they probably were more concerned about reputation than they are as a public company, where the focus is going to be more on how many listings did they get and how much did their revenue and earnings grow from year to year. And in order to do that, you've got to there are other venues that you can go list your equity. And if, you know, it's easier to go list somewhere else, and in this day and age where everybody just points and clicks and really doesn't know which exchange there's a lot of folks probably have no idea whether the stock they're trading is listed on the NASDAQ or on the NYSE. Yeah, it just doesn't really compute with them that there's any difference whatsoever, because you trade them the exact same way. But yeah, it back when I was coming up, and then back when you were coming up as well, something being listed at the New York Stock Exchange was kind of a big deal. Back, you know, things would list on the NASDAQ or the Amex and then jump up to the big leagues and move their stock to the New York Stock Exchange. And that transition doesn't happen anymore. So they've had to loosen the rules a little bit, or, you know, look the other way, when things are kind of fishy, and they're not there, you know, they're not there to protect the average investor anymore, and they probably never really were. But it's gotten worse. It's gotten worse because they've got a shorter term focus than they used to have, where they're focused on the profit. You know, but again, the quarter to quarter profit.
Well, that's you wonder. Of course, it's pressure on regulators. It's pressure on senators and legislators. And I really think it goes back to, well, My two major criticisms of the the Constitution, and it's not a criticism of the people who wrote it. The two things I think that are a real one of them, obviously, if you want to go back and say they didn't ban slavery out of the gate, well, if they would have done that, we wouldn't have had to fight a civil war and everything else. But leaving that one aside, I think the two big screw-ups that they could not have anticipated was, I think when they thought about people being able to control the Senate and the House, when you had essentially 535 people in, what was the year, 1790, say, the chances of you and me being able to, living in Chicago, being able to control an election, this is before the railroad was even invented, in South Carolina, we'd have to be like really quick guys, right? We'd have to be pretty quick bunny rabbits to be able to do that. Not to mention doing the same thing in New Hampshire at the same time. I mean, the thought, I think, never even crossed their mind, Russell, that we would try and influence elections out of our area. Plus, they would. Mm-hmm. I think these guys were there was enough crooks in the room to know that this Russell and Chief guy might very well be crooks, but it doesn't matter, because as much as they're crooks, they're gonna croak in probably 60 years in those days. And oh, by the way, they don't have enough time to do enough dastardly things. Well, one is, I think the corporation, which is now essentially a regular person, the way the Supreme Court looks at it, never dies. They can, generation after generation, have influence that gets maintained, where you and I can't, because we're out with the last generation, right? So I think that's a problem. And I think the idea that, you know, 90% of the money coming into a representative election in Wisconsin is from out of that district, I don't think that that's anything that anybody really feels is right. I mean, I don't. I mean, I don't know how to fix it, but to me, I don't think that was what was ever intended to you. I mean, so when you have those kinds of things happening, I mean, you could ask yourself, how exactly, and I would defer to you, because you're obviously, I was on the board a couple times, but you were much closer to the exchange than I ever was. How exactly does a license to trade stock or options that gives you essentially a monopoly as long as you did these things, but oh, by the way, at any given day, we can pull it back if you don't. How does that become somebody else's property to essentially sell stock to other people? How can the New York Stock Exchange or the CBA essentially sell the license that was, I use the term, loaned to them by the government? I mean, that should never be something that you can sell, because you can go back the next day, right? I mean, if you're not doing the regulatory job and the other stuff. When did it become yours to sell? Yours to rent, maybe, but not to sell. I mean, how do people ever thought that leap was there? They just took it and paid off enough people, and nobody ever said no, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really trying to think through the ownership, whether or not I agree that you know, their ability to run the exchange, you know, if it's at the whim of the government or not. As long as they follow a certain number of rules, it's theirs to keep. It's kind of like as long as I follow all the laws, my freedom is mine to keep as well. So I think it's kind of a stretch saying that they're renting it from the government, because the government really does have to prove their case if they're going to suddenly say that the New York Stock Exchange doesn't get to function as, you know, and they really are a public utility when it comes down to it. They provide a service that allows the rest of society to function pretty well. At least in my mind, where it allows capital to find its way to ways to grow the capital, or to, you know, expand a business or invent something new. I mean, that's the actual legitimate use of the stock market.
I'm not saying it's not legitimate, but I'm saying the Board of Trade, for instance, do they even really are they concerned about making markets? They got, hey, there's five people left that make markets. Guess what? You make all your money now for charging for quotes. That's not why we gave it to you.
I think that they want to see a certain amount of the volume trade at their exchange. They want to see as much as possible. And, you know, sometimes they offer incentives to liquidity providers to be there. And at least I know how this works, not at the New York Stock Exchange, but in another, at the option exchanges. If you're the lead market maker on Apple options at one of the exchanges, and you're doing a terrible job maintaining market share because you're not providing the right amount of liquidity, they're going to replace you.
Bull.
Well, but that's how it's supposed to be being judged.
I would say he doesn't like to talk in front of groups, but if you were to take the guy who does all my trading for me, Jim, you stick him in front of Congress, you would get a diatribe of every single week the markets get worse and worse and worse and wider, and nobody's there. And the chance of Citadel being yanked, one of their DPMs getting yanked, is the same chance as me being a jockey at Hawthorne Park this afternoon. You're right.
Well, Citadel's not. You say the chance of Citadel getting yanked is very, very low. Well, that's because they're in there as a major liquidity provider.
Yeah, and then nobody cares how wide the market. I watch this by the money. I mean, that's what I do for people, obviously, is I'm on the other side. I want these markets to be deep and liquid, and they're not. And every month they get worse. Every month.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't see anybody. I don't see that ever happen. I mean, one of my good friends who used to be, you know, vice chairman and so forth. And I said, where is there the degradation you're seeing in the options market? And he says to me, it's not even an agenda item anywhere. Nobody brings it up. Nobody talks about it. Nobody cares.
Yeah, well, at this point, there's so few liquidity providers seeking to really replace them with anyway.
That's what I'm saying.
Right. That's how it was supposed to, you know, work back in the day.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, we've gone down this road. Does anybody write a paper and say, okay, it's your job right now today, see if these markets are actually better than they were 10 years ago when we had 50 liquidity providers instead of 5. I'm going to say that piece of paper comes out and says, no, it's worse. I mean, do we even care?
It's actually gotten better. I mean, I haven't looked at the numbers in about a year or so, and I don't know how, actually about a year and a half, because I changed consulting jobs. But it was generally trending lower.
There's people. There's people that I know that are working at the OCC at night now, that their job is to make sure the marks are okay, because the markets end up so wide that the marks are horrible, where they adjust the bids and offers just to bring the marks back into line.
Well, when they spread them out at the end of the day.
Well, but they're not always just the end of the day now. Anytime I can name you. Especially this one group I work with now brings in all these stocks that I never hear of. But now I have to deal with them because they, you know, they want my option advice on them. And I'm looking at these things, I'm going, Jesus Christ, the stock's 2 cents wide and the option's a dollar and a half wide. What are you even doing in here? I mean, there's so many of those around, Russell. Uh-huh. I mean, unless you're...
Oh, yeah, all the... All the liquidity in the option market's in like the top 50, 100 names.
Yeah, and
I can't deny that at all.
I'm just saying, but so what? When do you start teaching at the new place?
When I'll talk to you next week from Indiana.
Hey, cool. All right, buddy. You take care of yourself. Have a nice week.
I've got to go down for orientation and stuff, but I don't start till the end of August.
All right, make sure you bring the pipe and the cardigan. Get them the full shot.
Absolutely. Growing a beard.
Oh, God. SP Futures up 9, NASDAQ Futures down 19. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.